This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Overseas Canadian mining operations have a record of being some of the worst offenders toward the environment and human rights. Extractive practices in Guatemala are a key example of how companies often put profits ahead of people's well-being. Earlier this year, the new Canadian International Institute for Extractive Industries and Development was established at UBC with the aim of helping developing countries benefit from their mining resources in an environmentally and socially responsible ways. Yet, rather than alleviating poverty, as the institutes claimed, it was promoting Canadian mining overseas with funds from Canadian mining companies. Sam Steim, a civil engineering student at the University of British Columbia, is part of an initiative called Stop the Institute, aimed at closing it down. And he joins us today on the phone. Hello, Sam.
Hello, good morning.
First of all, can you give us a little bit more detail about what is the Canadian International Institute for Extractive Industries and Development?
From our perspective of students who have been following this over the last year, year and a half, I suppose we can sum it up as a lobby group or as a think tank hosted at an academic institution, hosted at UBC specifically, but also partnered with SFU and École Polytechnique de Montréal, that is for the transnational Canadian extractive sector, so Canadian mining, oil, and gas sectors. You did mention that it has a mandate to address developing countries, or let's say so-called developing countries' needs for policy, legislation, regulatory development, and you know that supposedly will act to stimulate those countries' economic growth and address poverty. However, you know, the way that we are looking at this is that you know, since most of the world's mining companies, something like 75% of the mining companies and mineral exploration companies in the world are headquartered in Canada, Canada essentially acting as a jurisdiction of convenience for these companies. We see this institute then acting on their behalf in other countries where, you know, the extractive sector, say, of Peru is primarily Canadian companies or Canadian companies' local subsidiaries acting in Peru. So if this institute is going to be helping, say, the extractive sectors of Peru, essentially it's operating on the behalf of Canadian companies.
Now, the initiative that you're part of referred to as Stop the Institute, what precisely is that?
Essentially, it's a campaign. We wear fairly obviously on our sleeves what we're about. Stop the Institute is specifically to with the intention of closing this institute. We see this as completely an inappropriate thing for the federal government to be mandating and funding, and we see it as inappropriate for our universities to be hosting. We're students from across probably, I don't know how many, different faculties across the universities who are bringing our own critiques and talents to this. And we have a list of concerns with this institute specifically. A big part of it is the biased representation that it has, you know, among its executive board, its partners and strategic partners. You know, there are so many transnational Canada-based mining companies and industry associations among these strategic partners. You know, we say it's like a fox guarding the hen house. There are too many conflicts of interest there. You know, another issue is that the executive board, you know, many on the executive board and the leadership of this institute come from mining, come from business, come from technical backgrounds. It's essentially a team that is assembled to address the mandate of lobbying for Canadian extractive interests, you know, in these developing countries, rather than addressing the challenges that they present to other countries and to other peoples. You know, there's an important part, I think, locally for our universities. An important issue that we have to address is the loss of academic freedom that this institute brings to us. The contract between UBC and CETA, which is now the Department of Foreign Affairs, Trade and Development, essentially silences critical dialogue around extraction, where it no longer allows that any media publication that this institute hopes to make first needs to have CETA, or now DFAT-D, needs to be given 60 days notice before it's published, and then after that, there's essentially a veto power that comes from federal officials before anything is published. So it's essentially silencing any critical debate around this. I guess one final thing is there appears to be no intention of addressing the structural sources of the problem, which is accountability in Canadian courts for abuses abroad committed by these Canadian extractive companies. There's a lot of issues that we've identified with this.
Stepping back a little bit, I was wondering if maybe you could give us a little more detail on how mining operations affect the communities in the countries where Canadian mining operations are located.
Sure. So in Guatemala, it plays out to extreme measures, I suppose, compared to how it plays out here in Canada. There's the criminalization of dissent in Guatemala, like we see also in Canada. People opposed to these projects, you know, being called terrorists, being called radicals, being called guerrilleros, guerrillas. There's a lot of environmental issues, destruction of water sources, as in they dry up or are contaminated. Lots of issues with the chemicals that are used in the extractive process, in the production process at the mine sites, getting into the water, contamination of the air as well. At one site that I was at recently in Guatemala, one man was recently kidnapped, or there was an attempted kidnap. He was actually able to get away, but this is a thing that generally happens anytime that communities are resisting and organizing. Often they are criminalized, called terrorists, and then there are disappearances that happen of the leaders. Time and again, even the head of security for a couple of different companies, one Tahoe Resources located here in Vancouver, the head of security giving direct orders to kill protesters that are resisting the mine. 5 years ago, also in Guatemala, the head of security for HUD Bay's project near El Estor is accused of shooting one man and killing him, and shooting another man.
Now, what's been the response to from the international community regarding mining practices in general and the Institute in particular?
The response to Canadian mining industry is, I think there's a general understanding now that Canada essentially, or Canadian mining, are villains. Canada has a terrible reputation internationally.
Are Canadian mining companies being held accountable in any way in the international community? Are there steps being taken?
Yeah, there are steps being taken. Right now, HUD Bay is being sued. It has been taken to court. There's a criminal case in the Ontario Supreme Court right now. Several plaintiffs from from the El Estor area are suing Hudbay in Canadian courts for what they've done. Tahoe Resources right now, also based here in Vancouver, are being sued in a similar case for what they've been done, what they had done in Guatemala. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights had investigated Goldcorp's behavior in Guatemala, and in fact urged the state of Guatemala to suspend Goldcorp's Marlin mine operations for a couple of reasons, because of the impacts of the mine, and then also for the company's failure to consult the MAM and Sipacapense local people, indigenous Mayan people. Within Guatemala as well, there's increasing negativity toward Canadians who travel there, since the mining companies essentially are the first face of Canada that many people see in rural parts of Guatemala. Other Canadians who travel there are associated then with those mining companies and with the atrocities that these companies are doing. And in fact, there have been a few cases recently where Canadians off the beaten path are just about lynched just because they're Canadian and just because of that relationship that people make between Canada now and these predatory practices.
Well, this is a story certainly that we follow quite often here on Red Eye, and I'm sure we will continue to follow it. So I want to thank you very much, Sam, for taking the time to speak with me this morning.
Very good. Thank you, Jim.
I've been speaking with Sam Steim about the unethical practices of Canadian mining companies abroad. He is a civil engineering graduate student at the University of British Columbia.